How are we doing this morning, Wake? All right, I love to hear that. Hey, we are starting a new series, and it is called Respectable Sins. And so I'm going to intro that, but first I want to tell you a little bit about myself and share with you a story. So if we haven't met, my name is Jonathan. I'm the Wake director, and I want to share a story about when I was a senior in high school. So I graduated high school, and one of the things I loved to do in high school was I loved to fish. So I would go out. Come on, there's some fellow fishers out there with me. So I would go out in high school, and I would fish a lot. And so one night, my senior year, I went out, and I fished at nighttime around this pond. And so I'm fishing. I catch a few fish. I brought some friends with me along the way, and we're fishing. And so we're getting ready to leave. We had probably been there an hour and a half, and we're getting ready to roll. And, you know, you always kind of do this thing at the end where you're like, last cast. You just say last cast, and you just keep going until you catch a fish. And so I'm like, last cast, and I cast one out there. And I'm reeling it back in, and I thought I had a fish. And so what you do when you catch a fish or when you have one on your line is you do this thing you called set the hook. And so you basically, like, rear back on your rod and reel to try to push that hook through the fish's mouth to kind of hook the fish. So I set the hook on this fish, but it turns out there was no fish on the end of my line. And so my lure, which I want to show you guys, my lure comes flying out of the water. And, of course, it's pitch black. I can't see anything. And so this was actually the lure I was using. I don't know how many of you guys can see that. It's a popper. That's right. So this thing comes flying out of the water, and I can't see anything. And so all of a sudden, it hits me in the face. Not great, right? So this lure hits me right in the face, but it actually doesn't fall to the ground. It stays in my face. And so I'm standing there on the edge of this pond with this fishing lure in my face somewhere. And so I'm kind of feeling around, and I'm trying to figure out where it is. And I felt around, and it went directly into my lip. And so I'm feeling around, and I start to pull on this lure a little bit. There's a hook on here. It's called a treble hook. So I start to pull on this treble hook, and it will not come out of my lip. And so what that tells me is that it is hooked past the barb. And so there are little things on hooks, and I have a picture of them here in a second. But they're called barbs, and they're little bitty things that come backwards on a hook so that your hook doesn't come out of a fish's mouth whenever you hook it. Also, it really sucks to get out of your skin whenever it gets hooked past the barb, especially in your lip. So if you guys are, like, a little queasy, you don't love, like, looking at those things, I have a picture of my lip with this hook in it. So you can look away if you want to, but here's a picture. So that is senior year, Jonathan. I have one other one. Again, don't look if you don't like this. But yeah, that thing went right into my lip, and it wasn't that fun. So we went to the ER, as you can see there. But then that next picture right there. So that's actually a fishing hook. So you see that little bitty thing at the top of it? That is called the barb. And so I hooked myself in the lip past the barb, and I had to go to the ER. And the way that you get hooks out that are past the barb is that you actually have to push them out the other side and then cut that barb off. Huge bummer. So went to the ER, they pushed that barb out and cut it off, and they ended up taking that hook out of my lip. I'm sorry if you don't love those types of stories or pictures, but I just want to give you that quick picture, and then I want to actually transition into what we're talking about today. Because the topic that we're talking about today is actually something that the Bible calls a trap and a snare. And much like that fishing hook, right, that lure, it was designed for a purpose. It was designed for the purpose of catching fish, into baiting them and tempting them into thinking that it's food, and then they grab hold of it, and it hooks onto them. And I want to talk to you guys about a topic this morning that I think for a lot of us, we don't realize how much weight it can carry in our lives. We don't realize that if we give into it, that it can ultimately end up controlling so many of our thoughts, actions, and emotions. As we start in on this series, Respectable Sins, I think there are a lot of us in this room that know, man, I know that a lot of things are just clearly bad, right? Lying, cheating, stealing, killing, those are all really, really bad things. And we know that. Those are all clearly sins, right? But in this series, I want to talk to you guys about things that maybe we don't often think about or talk about. But again, that they can have so much weight in our lives. And so the topic that I want to talk to you guys about this morning is the topic of people-pleasing and fear of man. And I don't know if you even, if that lands anywhere with you, if you're like, man, I know exactly, I feel that often. I feel a fear of what others think of me. And to just kind of even lay out a definition of fear of man, right? That is a fear of disappointing others, a needing the approval of other people, being overly concerned with what others think about you. Or maybe it is just ultimately wearing yourself out to make others happy. And so a verse that I want to share with you guys is Proverbs 29:25. It says this, "Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe." Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. And I just want to start with a personal disclaimer this morning. People-pleasing and fear of man is one of my biggest struggles. I think so deeply about what other people think of me. And I can struggle with this all the time. And I really struggled with it in middle school and high school. I often was worried and consumed about what I was wearing, what I looked like, what other people thought of me. Was I funny enough for people? Was I popular enough for other people? And we can get caught so often in worrying about what everyone else thinks of us. And so my first point for you this morning is just exactly comes from Proverbs 29:25, and it is this, that approval of man is a trap. Approval of man is a trap. You can say fear of man, people pleasing, I put them all in the same category, that your heart is in a place where you are desiring and consumed and worried about what other people think of you, or you feel like you have to operate out of a place of fear of what other people would think about you. And so again, I start with that story about this lure because I think that it's really fitting because I think approval of man can be a trap in the same way. And it seems really, really small, right? It looks really, really enticing. And fear of man actually promises a lot of things. It promises us that other people are gonna think highly of us and that that's where life is found. Approval of man or people-pleasing promises us that we're gonna be able to find life and joy if just I can keep everyone else around me happy. But that's not the reality. It is a trap, and you will find that there is a lot of hurt and pain that comes alongside of the insecurity in our hearts when we decide and choose to operate out of fear of man or people-pleasing. And so I want to share with you a quick story. When I was in the Watermark Institute, so about 2 years ago, I did a program here at Watermark where you take a bunch of classes and you kind of study the Bible holistically. And so you're in a class with a bunch of other people, and there were about 40 of us in this class, and they're asking you and kind of quizzing you, and you're walking through the Bible with people. But I started to struggle so much with the fear of man when I was in this program because I thought about everyone else in that class, people who were in there who loved Jesus, who loved the Bible, and knew a lot of answers. And so I would get so worried. If I raise my hand, what if I answer a question and it's the wrong answer? What will everyone else in this room think of me? Will they not think I love Jesus enough? Will they not think I know my Bible as well as they do? What will the teacher think of me if he calls on me and I get this answer wrong? I started to have so much fear and anxiety about even the simplest thing as raising my hand in the air or being called on in class. And I think for a lot of us, that might translate for you guys, whether that's in school, whether that's on a sports team, whether that's with your friends. In so many areas, fear of man, the simple insecurity in my heart of worrying what other people think about me can come out in so many areas. Right, for you guys, that might be, wondering to yourself or fearing, man, do other people notice what I'm wearing? Is my shirt too big or too small? I can't believe I didn't make it onto the A team or that select team, and if I don't, then my worth is gone and people are gonna think I'm not good at sports. Do people think I'm funny, fun to be around, popular? What will other people think if I raise my hands during worship and no one else is raising their hands or other people are messing with one another? Is it going to be weird if I take notes and I pay attention? All of these different things, right? We can operate out of a place of worrying about what everyone else around us is doing or thinking. And I think for a lot of us, we can become so fearful that we start to not really understand how to operate. We become anxious about the things we do or say. And for me, that was really, really true when I was a part of that program. And it's still true even to this day. Because fear of man is a trap. And if we're willing to fall for it, I think that ultimately it points to something bigger in our hearts, right? Just like that fishing lure, that a fish is willing to come up and bite and take hold of that lure, but it is a trap. And if we are willing to go and say, man, I'm so worried and consumed about other people's thoughts of me, I think that it points to something bigger and deeper in our hearts. And so my second point for you this morning is this. It says, our desire for approval is rooted in a belief that God is not enough. Our desire for approval is rooted in a belief that God is not enough. And I want to highlight this point by sharing with you and spending a majority of our time in a story in 1 Samuel. So if you have your Bible, you can turn to 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel's in your Old Testament. It's kind of towards the front of your Bible, but I want to share with you a story from there. So 1 Samuel chapter 15, I'm just going to set you guys up for this and kind of where we're going. But God has anointed this guy named Saul. And so Saul is this really tall dude. He's big. He's awesome. He looks like he should be king. And God has anointed Saul to become king. And if you don't know anything about Saul, again, he looks like he could and should be the king, but he had a bunch of character flaws because internally he was really insecure and fearful, but externally he looked like he should be the guy. And so God instructs Saul, right? He's the king, and he instructs Saul to go and go to war with these people. And so now I want you to really pay attention to what God asks of Saul here in 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 3. And so God says this, "Now go and attack the Amalekites and totally destroy all that belongs to them. Do not spare them and put them to death." And right, that's very, very like harsh, right? And I want to just first address that that might seem like harsh, that God's asking Saul to go and attack this group of people, right? But there are two things that I want to point out for you. Okay, so number one, what you don't see in that context is that the Amalekites had actually attacked Israel many, many times in the past. And there was a history of war between these people. And then the second one is this, that the Amalekites were actually a threat to the promises or covenants that God had made with his people at the time in Israel. And so God instructs Israel and Saul to go and attack the Amalekites. So, right, God tells Saul to go and destroy all the people and all of their belongings. And so now listen to this next part. We go into verse 7. It says, "Then Saul attacked the Amalekites all the way from Havil to Shur, near the eastern seaboard of Egypt. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best sheep and cattle and the fattened calves and lambs and everything that was good. They were unwilling to destroy completely, but everything that was despised and weak, they totally destroyed." So Saul wipes out all the Amalekites and everything that was worthless, right? If it was not, if it did not have a value, he got rid of it and destroyed it. But everything that was good and that had a really high value, or if it was a great fattened calf, or it was a great, herd of sheep, he kept it. So just in that, I just want to ask you a question. Did Saul obey and listen to God? No, he didn't. He did not. And so we have another character to introduce that actually comes and calls out Saul for his actions. And so Samuel, the guy that the book is named after, Samuel was a priest and a prophet. And Samuel comes on the scene, and he is someone who loves God, knows his word, and has basically been giving Saul counsel. And so Samuel has a dream one night, and God tells Samuel, "Man, Saul disobeyed me. I need you to go and confront him." And so Samuel comes and basically confronts Saul on disobeying God. And we see that in verse 17. Samuel said, "Although you were once small in your own eyes, did you not become the head of the tribes of Israel and the Lord anointed you king over Israel?" Samuel saying, right, you never thought you could be king, but you know clearly that God put you in this position. And then in verse 18, he says this, "And he sent you on a mission saying, go and completely destroy this wicked people, the Amalekites. Wage war against them until you've wiped them out. Why did you not obey the Lord? Why do you pounce on the plunder and do evil in the eyes of the Lord?" And so Saul, again, clearly says, God has given you authority. He's put you in this position. So why did you not obey him? He clearly set you boundaries and things in order for you to do, and you disobeyed them. And I love Saul's response here. I don't actually love it, but you can see clearly the insecurity in his heart here. He says this, verse 20. He says, "But I did obey the Lord," Saul said. "I went on the mission the Lord assigned me, and I completely destroyed the Amalekites, and I brought back Agag, their king." And then he says, "The soldiers took the sheep and the cattle and the plunder from the best of what was devoted to God in order to sacrifice them to the Lord." So he now points the finger and says it was the soldiers. It was everyone else. They were the ones who were doing what was wrong. They were the ones who didn't destroy everything. And in fact, they actually brought him back for God. They brought him back so that they could sacrifice these cattle and sheep and all these things for God. So actually, not only was it not me, but what those other people did, the people under me, they actually did a good thing. And so Saul shifts the blame, right? But Samuel replied in verse 22. He says, "Does the Lord delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as much as in obeying the Lord? To obey is better than to sacrifice." And in verse 24, Saul says to Samuel, "I have sinned. I have violated the Lord's command in your instructions." And this last part, I want you to really pay attention here. He says, I was afraid of the men, so I gave in to them. He says, I was afraid of the men, so I gave in to them. And so what Saul is saying here is, I knew what was right. I knew what God called me to do, but everyone else was telling me that I should keep these sheep and keep the cattle, that I should not fully listen and obey God, that I should do what was best in my own eyes. And so he disobeyed. And again, I think for us, so many of us in this room, we know the difference between right and wrong, and we know what we should do and what we shouldn't do, but so often the problem is, it's really the question, do I trust God enough to do what I know to be right, even if it's going to come at my own cost, even if other people are going to look at me and think less of me, even if it's going to cost me that friend, even if I know that I'm going to get made fun of for going and talking to that person that nobody else wants to hang out with, even if I know that the test answers are there and that if I'm going to be so uncool, if I don't take them from my other friends and use them just like everyone else, even if we know the right answers, we know what we're supposed to do, but it ultimately comes down to a place, are our hearts in a place where we truly believe that following God is worth it, regardless of what other people think or believe? And I think we could all agree also that that's really, really hard to do. And I just want to acknowledge that and address that. It is really, really hard to follow God, to obey what he calls us to do, but also just to set aside all those fears and worries and thoughts that run through our heads about what other people think of us. And so because it's really hard, I want to leave you with this third and final point. I want to leave you with some encouragement that I think can help you as you continue to try to operate in middle school out of a place of fighting fear of man and people pleasing. My third and final point for you is this, to remember what is true. To remember what is true. And so I would just encourage you in remembering what is true, that you would think back and think about what we share here at Wake, what you talk about on a weekly basis at small group, that you would use that place as a resource to wrestle and to find your identity in God. Because I've heard it said often that sin costs you more than you want to pay and it keeps you longer than you want to stay. And specifically with people pleasing and fear of man, it is just a lie. We are believing and operating out of a lie. Right, that's what Proverbs 29 says, that it's a snare. And the fact that I'm willing to go and grab hold of that and I fall into that trap points to the fact that I'm believing a lie. So I'm encouraging you to remember what is true. And the verse that comes to my head as I was writing this message that so often I have to remind myself of is 1 Corinthians 4:18. Says this, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And I actually think that might be 2 Corinthians 4:18. I might have put that wrong. But 2 Corinthians 4:18, that's not 1 Corinthians 4:18, it's 2 Corinthians 4:18. But so it says, so we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And so again, I want you guys to think about this idea and the fact that we have to continually remind ourselves of what is true. Because if we look around at all the things that our friends are doing and what everyone else is tempting us to do and what everyone else is doing, then we're going to continually fall into that trap and that fear of what other people are going to think of us. People-pleasing is looking for a temporary solution to eternal problem. It's looking for a temporary solution to an eternal problem because the problem is inside of our hearts. And we have to remember what is true and who God has created us to be. And the fact is that he is the one who's given us worth. We can find our identity in God and God alone because he loved you so much, he cared for you, that he sent his son to die on a cross for you, that he created you in his image. Right? A few weeks ago, we talked about it in Ephesians where it says that we are God's workmanship. We're his masterpiece. God created you in his image because he loves you and he wants you to reflect him. And so we have to continually remind ourselves of what is true and who we are and who God is. And the last verse that I would share with you that as I struggled so much with fear of man and people pleasing, there are so many times, I can't even count, probably on a daily basis, the outfit I'm putting on in the morning, the conversations I have with people, the way that I think I'm responding when other people either have conflict or disappointment with me, that can really eat me up and be really, really hard for me. And I have to remind myself of Galatians 1:10. And Galatians 1:10 says, obviously, I'm not trying to win the approval of man, but of God. If I were trying to please people, then I would not be Christ's servant. I think for a lot of us in this room, we need to ask ourselves the question, who am I trying to win the approval of? At the end of the day, who am I trying to seek to think more highly of Jonathan? Is it everyone else in this room, or is it God? Is it all of our friends? Is it all the people that maybe we don't even really know or we don't even talk to, but on social media, I want to look like I have it all together. I want everyone else to look at me and think, man, that guy or that girl, they've got it all. But that's just not the reality. And we see when we actually trust and we rely on God for our security and our identity, then we can actually boast in our weaknesses and we can actually be humble in the things that we are good at and in the gifts that God's given us. And so I think as we wrap up this message, I really would challenge and encourage you guys to understand the weight of people-pleasing that you have in your lives, because it can be a trap. It can be something just as small, right, as that little barb on the end of that hook. You might not even realize it now, but someday if you continue to operate out of a place of fearing what other people think of you, it's only gonna grow, and it's only gonna be a trap that you continually fall into. And so I hope and pray that you would be reminded of what is true this morning and that you would remind yourself of what is true on a daily basis. Let's pray. Lord, thank you so much for sending your son to die for us and that you've given us our worth, our identity. You've given us love and you cared for us when we were still sinners. You died for us. Lord, I pray that we would fight the approval of man, that we would fight the insecurities in our hearts, that we would fight being fearful of what everyone else thinks about us. And that we would be reminded that we are your servants. We are not your servants because you need us to do anything for us, for you, but we are your servants because you loved us so much. And so now we have the opportunity to get to share that with so many others. Lord, I pray for the students in this room. I pray for all of the situations that they are wrestling with on a daily basis at school. I pray that they would be able to stand firm, remind themselves of what is true, and know that their identity is found in you and you alone. I pray all these things in your name. Amen.